Well, I was thinking this week about what is the role of a poet storyteller in times of ecological crisis, in times of crisis in general? What is the role? And then I thought, well, that question maybe is not big enough. What is the role for all of us in a time in specifically talking about the ecological crisis that we are facing? Well, that kind of question means that you are listening to Poetry, Passion, and Pleasure with your host, Dale Byron. And you know, this is the place where each week we delve into the practical, everyday uses of poetry to help us live our lives more fully, more centered, more sanely, all of those things. So let's get right into this question. And I thought what I would do is let's just jump right into the poem, and then we'll talk a little bit more about what is the role of all of us in particular, or all of us in general, but in particular, what is the role that we have as poets and as storytellers? You know, as storytellers, we are all, regardless of whether we consider ourselves to be poets or not, we are all storytellers. And certainly, storytelling is a huge responsibility that each of us has, especially if we want to see some shifts and changes in the world around the whole ecological crisis, the earth overshoot challenges that we're facing, the political challenges, quite frankly, that are also political and social challenges that are also implicated fully in this whole question of ecological crisis. So the poem this week, and again, we've got one poem, so this will be a shorter edition of the podcast. This poem is called To Act in Wiser Ways. To Act in Wiser Ways. To act in wiser ways, to mirror what nature knows, how a cause like a river can deliver effects from such faraway times and places, and how now we have turned ourselves into Homo Colossus, leaning heavy on the battered lands, this struggling world. See how skies have turned hot, red, and fiery, great forests retreating from their many places, so that now we can barely measure the magnitude of the what that is no longer here, without our broken hearts weeping to witness this slowly unfolding violence. How many indestructible errors have we made that now refuse to go away? Or at least on terms that future generations will be able to forgive. Plastics, particles, and forever chemicals. Great streams of micro waste entering the veins, lungs, stomachs of each and every sentient being, making this world their home. Coral reefs bleached, soils bleeding life, masses of wild animals herded into the box canyons of oblivion. How we have searched our minds and hearts, how we have searched our minds and hearts for newer stories with better endings. The stories that have our stunning cleverness, our stunning human cleverness, finely and securely bound by wisdom. At nightfall, the hills nearby burn with the red clouds of dusk, now hovering above the coming night's silken and sudden silence. I walk in awe. I walk in awe, held in a suspended state of grace and joy, as still I hear the Stellar's jay, her beloved calls of warning. So I think all of our work, and again, I think poet storytellers are particularly implicated, because the stories and the poems that we tell, I think, must do in this context, must do three things: to praise and love and to be in awe of the earth. Poems must do that. Second, that poems must protest and name what is unjust, unwise, and destructive in the world. Name it. Speak it out loud. Poems that do that. And finally, poems must witness and grieve what has been destroyed and lost. That is very important. So to love the world, to love the world, to be in awe of the world, to protest and name what is unjust and unwise and destructive, and finally to witness and grieve for all that has been lost, for all that has been lost. And to undertake, my note says, as I was thinking about this, to undertake each of these kinds of poems, each of these purposes, with a deep and abiding curiosity, a profound humility, and all with a dash of joyful humor to keep us centered and sane. And I really mean this. We can all do this. This particular poem, To Act in Wiser Ways, is a poem that I wrote earlier this year. And in my mind, it is really, you know, some poems specialize in one or the other, a praise poem to help us fall in love with the world, you know, a protest poem to call out and name what is wrong and destructive and unjust. And the third being a poem to help us witness and grieve what is lost. I think in this case, I wasn't trying to do anything. It's just you set out when you're going to tell a poem story. And you set out, and hopefully you actually surprise yourself. Remember, we've always said, if the poet is not surprised, if the storyteller is not surprised, then the listener, the reader, the hearer will not be either. So that's important. But I think in a way, when I say to act in wiser ways, to mirror what nature knows, how a cause like a river can deliver effects from such faraway times and places. See, I think what I'm getting at, what was coming through there, was that this business of cause and effect, there are times when we imagine that, you know, that X happens and then immediately Y happens. And what has occurred in our ecological world is that so many of these things are results that we are harvesting, that we're on the flute end of these results of things that occurred many, in some cases, many, many years ago. I mean, the concentration of carbon in the air, of course, as we know, we've been burning fossil fuels. We've been burning fossils for energy for 200 or so years, really in great earnest for less than that. but we've been using fossils in particularly if you think of coal for 200-ish years. So we are now at the flute end, at the results, at the unintended consequences. So that's what I was talking about, where cause and effect can be very far apart. And we need to begin to really focus in terms of our systemic views of the world in ways that have us realize that when you're looking at a very incredibly complex system, like the natural world, like that, the things that are occurring now, it's like the indigenous, things that are occurring now that have their roots way upriver, way, way upriver. And that's why the term making decisions for seven generations is a nod to this notion. And I use the term in the last part of that first stanza, and how now we have turned ourselves into Homo Colossus, leaning heavy on the battered lands, this struggling world. Homo Colossus is a term that was coined some time ago, but it's talking about the heavy, heavy footprint that we must now change. And we can name these things. We can name these things. So what I am naming is I am naming something here that it is certainly unjust and unwise to not understand the massive unintended consequences of our actions. That's why we have to look from a systems perspective. And when I talk about the certainly talking about the how many indestructible errors have we made that now refuse to go away. So these are results that we are now experiencing. That again, this theme that occurred a long time ago, and the term that I use, which I think is a very descriptive term. I say, see how skies have turned hot, red, and fiery. This is in another stanza. Great forests retreating from their many places so that now we can barely measure the magnitude of the what that is no longer here. Without our broken hearts, weeping to witness the slowly unfolding violence. The slowly unfolding violence. I don't know about you, but when I first heard that term, the slow violence, it really named for me, and this is another part of the naming and protesting. It named for me that violence, we are used to thinking about, again, a kind of immediate cause and effect, that somebody aggresses on someone, on another person or animal or whatever. And we see the immediate effect of that aggression. But there's also a slow and unfolding violence that is occurring. And for us to begin to get our minds and hearts around that term. And then the next to the last stanza, it says, coral reefs bleached, soils bleeding life, masses of wild animals herded into the box canyons of oblivion. We have since 1970, we have 70% of the wild animals on this planet. I think of a particular size, but imagine that 70% have gone away in a little over 50 years. This is not, I mean, to say it's unsustainable, it insults the word. I mean, doesn't even do justice, the word unsustainable. How we have searched our minds and hearts for newer stories with better endings, with better endings. Of course, we're doing that as well. The stories that have our stunning human cleverness finally and securely bound by wisdom. This is another powerful idea. The philosopher Daniel Schmattenberger talks about this concept that all the great challenges we face as human beings, those great challenges are caused by our human cleverness, our human genius and cleverness, unbound by wisdom. Think about that. That cleverness is wonderful. Being ingenious and creative is wonderful. But if we do not bind our cleverness with wisdom, wisdom would say we can't fill the oceans with microplastics. Wisdom would say we can't have DDT in the 1950s that was doing a massive damage. Wisdom would bind cleverness so that the forever chemicals that are now everywhere in the world would not be everywhere in the world. And we would not have put lead in gasoline that affected the IQs and health of millions and millions of people. All of those things, they were inventions that were clever and did something on one level that was good and interesting. But if we had used wisdom to bind those things, we would have either changed them or become more creative so that we did not introduce drugs and chemicals and compounds and activities and all manner of things that had all of these massive unintended consequences that we are living at the flute end of today. But I want to end the episode with the last stanza again, because this is the one that is about praise. See, it's not about facing this and putting ourselves into, speaking of a cul-de-sac or a box canyon for so many animals. We don't want to do that for ourselves and put ourselves into a state of despair where we feel like we have no agency, where we feel like there's no possibility. And that kind of despair breeds inactivity and passiveness. And that is the last thing we need now. So the last stanza again. At nightfall, the hills nearby burn with the red clouds of dusk, now hovering above the coming night's silken and sudden silence. I walk in awe, held in a suspended state of grace and joy, as still I hear the Steller's Jay, her beloved calls of warning. Now, this poem for me, again, that I wrote earlier this year, does not, I believe, shy away from some very difficult facts and realities that we are faced with. And yet at the same time, in the same breath, I want to praise the world. I want us to fall in love with the mystery and the beauty and the utter awesomeness of the world. That's what that last stanza is all about. and even the Steller's Jay. You know, it's a warning cry, but it's a beautiful, lovely warning cry, that sound, as so many of the sounds that when we step into the forest, we step deep into the natural world and fall in love again and again and again. Okay, well, that's a wrap. As I always say, thank you so much. If you're new here, welcome. If you're returning, welcome back. You know, write a note, do a like, pass this along to someone that you think might enjoy stepping in to poetry and using it in practical, everyday ways to enhance our lives, to enhance their life. So please do that. And as I always say, until next time and next poem or poems, please, please take good care of yourself.